This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Sports Daily. It is a Thursday. Thursdays are always fun because we begin to get you ready for the NFL weekend. We'll have our betting insider, PJ Glasser, on. He'll talk all his favorite college bets, his pro bets. We'll look ahead to some Thursday night football bets tonight as well. Coming up next hour, our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, hops on. There's a lot to cover with Fitz. The disappointment for K-State football, Coach Klieman in a situation that's being talked about a lot on social media that he's dressed a little bit. How is he doing? I will see if Fitz has any insight on that. The basketball team, and a little dicier probably in the last two games than we'd like to see. We'll get to Fitz with all of that stuff for you a little later. Jad Chambers is producing. He's got the IHOP hotline for you. Introducing a new Indiana Jones and the Great Circle themed limited time offer menu, fully loaded French toast. How about the secret cookie butter? French toast, creamy cookie butter, vanilla sauce is topped with a dusting of cookie crumbles. That number, 869-1240, to get in touch with us. Of course, you can get in touch with us lots of ways on the program here. You can message us through the video platforms that you have available on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, and on 12 News Connected. Always appreciate that partnership with 12 News. And you can leave us your voice messages if you're listening through the Odyssey app, which is a great way to listen now, in the future, in the past, whatever. Just look for us on KFH. You can leave us voicemails. Alongside Tommy Kester, I'm Jacob Albrecht. It is a Thursday. Tommy, how are you?
Man, I'm good. I realized this morning we're getting really close to that really fun time around Thanksgiving where you've got Thanksgiving football, you've got the holiday tournaments for college basketball, getting closer to like the championship conference games in college football, bowl season right around the corner, of course, the playoff. There's a lot going on. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it is the Thanksgiving holiday. If we get good weather, boy, it's going to be a sports frenzy. It's crazy work frenzy. We will not have programming. No, we will not have a show on Thanksgiving Day. We will not have a show on Black Friday. These are the craziest weeks for the family business, Tommy. So we've got that mixed into that as well. But, you know, Thursday football is just Thanksgiving Day football. So it's just the best. It's just the best. I wish. And they don't, and it's probably because the NFL switched to doing three games. Like Texas and Texas A&M are in the same conference now. That was always, I feel like that was always a Thanksgiving Day game. Wish we could get back to that a little bit, but with three NFL games, maybe not. But it's a great football weekend coming up. Great football next week as well. We're going to get to all of it as we make our way through. We'll give away a little HTO for you as well. That'll come later in the program, your opportunity to win some HTO. So stay tuned for your opportunity there. Tommy, let's start with this before we get into football. We'll start with, and this is not news for us on this program. A few weeks ago, we were talking to Wichita State's athletic director, Kevin Saul, about a difficult decision they had to make with the cheerleading squad and where they sit during basketball games. He brought up some of the numbers that he very publicly put out through a letter, basically a public letter, talking about the changes financially that are coming for college athletics. We've all known that's happening. We all know these court cases are there. But as we learned in that interview, I guess it would be 3-4 weeks ago now, there are big numbers, even for a school like Wichita State, who does not have football, who does not have a massive conference media rights agreement, you know, a good one, but not one of the Power Four now agreements. they've still got to come up with another $7 million a year. $7 million a year, Tommy. That's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money as you're trying to rebuild the men's basketball program, which is the main revenue driver, and get back to the point where you can fill that arena up and drive most of that revenue. It's coming at a time where women's basketball continues to struggle. So we look at that, and that's the challenge facing Wichita State. Again, we've known that here on this show for a while. I do think it's really interesting, and I appreciate the transparency of it. But if you project that out to the, you know, to the major power conference football playing schools, I think that gives you some idea of the transition that's happening behind the scenes in college athletics. We're going to revenue share. We're going to do all of these things. They've got to back pay athletes now for NIL opportunities not foreseen. And I think the biggest challenge on this for schools is going to be, you've been trying to raise NIL money, right, for the last few years. Now you've got to raise money that goes to the school. So you've almost got two pots to fill now, right? Like before, you could sort of shift maybe some of it to NIL. Now you got two pots to fill. You got to fill the NIL pot and you got to fill the revenue sharing pot. That's going to be a challenge for these schools. And I think this is where a lot of people who have been very opposed to everything have said this is a real danger to the non-revenue generating sports. And it is a real danger to the non-revenue generating sports. There's no question about that.
And it's a real danger to the schools that don't have football programs that are major conference football programs, because those football universities and the major conferences, they're going to have to pay more. Absolutely, they will. But they're also generating significantly more revenue. And so that kind of offsets, I think. And I don't know that.
I think
I don't
it
know
cuts the, both ways.
I don't know the figures behind it. It's probably six in one hand, half a dozen in the other.
You better be good. I'll say that.
Absolutely.
Like imagine being a non-competitive power conference football team, where you're not selling out a stadium every week. That's going to be tough.
Well, and on top of that, we've seen a trend happen, and it's not just been Kansas. I know they're the most recent one to do it, but I know Northwestern did it. There are other schools that are building new stadiums, but they're building smaller new stadiums, and they would rather have fewer seats at a higher price point, more premium options and things like that, than having, you know, like Texas A&M's Kyle Field with, what do they have, 100,000 seats in College Station? You know, like that's kind of become the trend on that. Recently, at least with some of these, you know, other programs like Kansas. So it's interesting, you know, getting that note from Kevin Saul yesterday, and I know that it, you know, made the rounds all over the city, all across the fan base, Shocker Nation, all of that. I think it paints a pretty clear picture as to what the needs are. And, you know, look, I don't think that any major college institution, whether you're Wichita State or Alabama, is looking for sympathy, and they're not going to get a whole lot of it. That's not really the way.
They might be looking for it, but they're not going to find it.
They're not going to get a whole lot of it because, you know, generally speaking, for decades and decades and decades, these institutions have been able to make money hand over fist, especially the ones that have major college football programs and not have the need to compensate players. And all of that is, you know, coming to bear now in today's landscape and this ever-changing world. Now you've got to adjust. Now you've got to shift. You've got to figure out, okay, how do we not only try to generate the revenue for our student athletes so we can get the best ones to our school to be competitive, but then how do we also make sure that we're raising money for our university so we don't go broke at the same time? That's a really difficult tug of war between those two sides. And I think it probably, you know, if you're talking to probably longtime college administrators, college athletics administrators, this is exactly why they've been opposed to compensating players for years and years and years, because of the challenge that it creates in figuring out, you know, how do we make money too? So it's not an easy solution. It's going to take a lot of work on you know, both sides, I think. And I think that the fan bases, the donor base, all of that, they need to understand in general, look, it's a new landscape. And the bottom line is, if we want to stay competitive, we've got to figure out a way to make all this work.
Yeah, it's I don't know what this means. It's very complex, obviously, anytime you're dealing with this much money. It's not all there was always going to be consequence to this, right? I understand that. I've been one of the biggest advocates for the changes basically that are happening and the court rulings that are, because it's, you know, whether we like it or we don't like it, what was happening, I don't believe was, I mean, it's borderline illegal, right? Like it's not the right thing to do to not compensate the people and the players that have most to do with the money generated. Coaches were obviously being fairly compensated, so then the players should be fairly compensated. I think there will be some comeuppance. I do think it's like it cuts so many different directions too. Like, where can you find the money? Well, the easiest thing to do is generate, not the easiest, but the simplest, I should say, thing to do mathematically is to just raise more money, right? To generate more money. It's hard to do that when you're not competitive. It's hard to do that when you are not winning, right? So how do you get to that point? Because it costs a lot of money to be successful. You have to pay the coach. You have to pay the players. You have to find the right ones. And you have to fill an arena, right? So you have to do all of those things too. And this is the danger for the non-revenue generating sports. Now, the non-revenue generating sports may not cost you a lot of revenue either. And, you know, maybe there are realignments with other sports that don't require as much travel, for instance. You know, the cheerleading situation was an interesting microcosm of this, honestly.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a revenue generating sport, but it cost a lot of money to run the program. So a difficult decision has to be made, and people are upset by that. There are going to be a lot of difficult decisions that have to be made. It's going to be turbulent for a few years. And where it all lands, I'm not sure. For the other non, you know, major revenue generating sports, I'm not sure. Donors will help, certainly. They have at Wichita State, Gene Stevenson's big gift, and he was rewarded with part of the naming of, you know, X Stadium and that whole complex and facility.
Which well deserved, by the way. I'm happy that
sure.
all went down yesterday.
That's the kind of stuff that's going to have to happen. That's the kind of stuff that's happened forever in college athletics, though. Like it has at every level, too, by the way, not just at the big schools. It's happening all over the place because people want to see these things be successful. And if you look, you're probably not listening to this show if you fall in this camp, there's a large portion of the population that's like, well, why do we even care so much about sports? Well, where do you think the school generates its money?
Right.
I use this example all the time. I want you to go look at the enrollment at the University of Alabama before Nick Saban got there. And I want you to go look at what happened with enrollment in the years that he was there. If you want to know why, there's your why. Right? Kids want to go to Alabama because they have a good football team.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can tell you I was here when Wichita State went to the Final Four. Business was good in this city. And it wasn't solely based on that, but man, that was certainly a part of it. It was a contributing factor, 100%. And so that's why sports are important.
And look, for Wichita State, a lot of difficult decisions. I think it's important also to point out one thing that you can't find yourself in the business of is paying coaches not to coach.
Right.
That's a massive strain on that overall pool of money. So, you know, that will help at some point down. I don't remember when everything expires on all of that, but that will help a great deal. But you've still got to be able to get players in, find the right ones. It's what's been so disappointing about women's basketball off to a slow start. Look at what KU did in the last 2 days. KU, if you haven't paid attention, here's what. K-State just had their best recruiting class for women's basketball ever, and they're a top 10 team this year. KU, in the last 2 days, has brought in 2 5-star players in women's basketball. Why do you think that is? Because probably their NIL investment in that sport is growing. Why do you think that is? We were watching a game last night, and it was KU's game last night against Iowa. They were playing a neutral court game, a tournament, you know, a tournament, holiday tournament type game in South Dakota. And I'm looking at that, and that arena is packed. And then I remember the Champions Classic for KU versus Michigan State. Crickets. Yeah. You want to know why there's more investment in women's basketball? That's why.
Yeah.
They're filling up arenas now. And so there are more opportunities now, too, than there ever have been.
My final point on all of this, relating it back to Wichita State, you talked about how the cheerleading situation has kind of been a microcosm of this new landscape. Buckle up, everybody, because that's not going to be the last situation. You've got to get creative. You've got to figure out ways to cut costs, to generate revenue, to provide all of these different elements that can help you get to that shortfall. That's the responsibility of Kevin Saul and the athletics department. Get ready. Buckle up, everybody, because the things that we thought, you know, or maybe even never was on our radar that were going to happen or could be, even be on the landscape, they might. They very well might. And I think it's a good thing. Adapt or die. Evolve or die.
Well, it's whether it's a good thing, it's a necessary thing. There are going to be a lot of things that happen that piss us off. Yeah,
but evolve or die.
I mean, they just will. But you have to adapt. I mean, there's no choice. Irrelevancy is the most dangerous thing. So, it's going to be tough, but that it does give a nice picture. And again, it was interesting to hear that a few weeks ago, and now to see it, and then to think about what it might mean for power conference schools that have those massive TV deals. It's a lot of money that's going to have to get generated. Some of it might be simple. You might pay an extra $5 on your football ticket. That's an easy one, right? Nobody's going to care about that. And some of them are going to be more difficult and intrude in places that really hurt people's feelings for good reason. But we'll see. We'll see how it all goes. You can find that. It's all over the place. Go Shockers has it. 12 News, everybody has it. All right, we'll come back. We're going to get a quick segment in, then we'll have PJ Glasser, bottom of the hour, talking football betting, including a big, I think, bettable game tonight. We'll get into all of it as we roll forward. Thanks, Prairie Fire Coffee, for keeping us fueled up with a great cup of coffee each and every morning here at KFH Sports Daily. Coming right back.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here. It is a Thursday. Albrecht and Cast are with you. Glad to be with you. Maybe we're with you, from the past, because we can get to you through the Odyssey app, where you can listen to this show and all our great programming, including tonight, Browns hosting the Steelers. The Odyssey app has it. If you can't listen to it on the radio on KFH, no problem. Just search KFH on the Odyssey app, and you will find Westwood One's coverage of Thursday Night Football. That begins at 6:30 tonight. Tommy, we'll get to that game with PJ Glasser. I'm very interested in tonight's game. I think there are some winnable pieces of that game. Real quick, to Major League Baseball. We haven't given a lot of attention to the awards, even though the Royals have been up for a lot of them. They didn't get, Cy Young. We didn't think Tarik Skubal. Tarik Skubal was unanimous. Matt Cotraro was probably, of these big ones, the best shot. He didn't get it. But what I do think yesterday, as we learn about Skubal, is two Royals for the first time, basically, Tommy, in our lifetimes, two Royals pitchers were top four in the American League Cy Young voting. Seth Lugo was second. Cole Reagans was fourth. Man, that is wild stuff. Wild stuff to think about.
It's a big deal. I mean, you think back to all of the years that, even that the Royals were contenders. Hasn't been very many of them, but there have been several. Even those years, I mean, I can think of like one top starter on those rotations and, maybe a couple of other ones that were decent or okay or whatever.
They were deep, right? But they weren't
right.
Elite.
Like, I go back to the 80s. Like, of course, you think about Brett Saberhagen. And then it was everybody else, right? Even like in 2014, 2015, they had, I know they brought in like Johnny Cueto that one year to win the World Series.
Giordano Ventura.
Ventura was there.
And of course, they had Zach Greinke.
Right, they had Greinke for a while. But Greinke was the main guy. He was the only guy.
And he won one, but he was the only guy. Now, you look at this and you see those two guys on there. And like, you think about that and they're coming back. Now we know Waka's coming back. Mm-hmm. We know Singer's coming back. Like, Royals fans ought to be really, 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 we've talked about it. They have such an attackable offseason to make themselves better because they just don't need to do that much. right? They've got to solve a couple of spots in the lineup.
They got to look offensively. They have to look offensively.
They can do it with veterans, though. They don't need some big bat in the middle. They've got three of those already. They need the little pieces of a lineup. They need a couple arms in the bullpen. I know they were good.
They get the framework of a bullpen, I think, ready to go. Ursig,
I agree.
If Harvey is healthy, you know, they've got, you know,
it's all right there.
They've got some guys there that could do some stuff.
It is all right there. Let me just look here and see if they're already. I was joking with a lot of people yesterday. Like, I'm so glad as these awards get that all my baseball future bets clear out of the betting tickets on the sites. Because they just sit there forever. So right now, the Royals, Tommy, to win the World Series next year, 30-1. You can get them at 30-1 right now. It's not going to get better than that.
I might throw a little scratch on that. That's not a bad futures play.
$10. You know, $10. Win $300. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Are you going to mention that, you know, my Braves had another Cy Young Award winner in Chris Sale? In the National League?
I mean, that's a pretty big deal. That's a great story.
That's the first Cy Young Award, I think, that the Braves have won since the 90s, I believe.
You looking for Braves pitching sympathy? Because you're not going to find it here. It's not going to come from me. I've been a fan of the most pitching-starved team in the planet for its existence. And we follow maybe the second most starved pitching team in existence. Braves fans can't roll in here looking for pitching. Like, it's been so long since we've won a Cy Young, except you've won like all of them for, you know, 20 years. But that was a good story. The Chris Sale story is a very good story. I'm glad for him. I like Chris Sale. All right. Just wanted to get that out there. If you didn't catch it, no, they didn't win the Cy Young. Two in the top four, though. And those guys come back. Right. And those guys have just stretched themselves to new frontiers in innings pitched.
I like that 30-1 future. I didn't realize that they were 30-1 to win the World Series next year.
30-1. I see PJ listening to us in the waiting room here. 30-1, PJ, on the Royals. And they got everybody coming back right now. You can get it right now. It's not getting any better than that. We'll talk to PJ. We might talk about that for just a second. But we'll get into a lot of football this weekend, including Thursday night football. PJ Glasser, our betting insider, joins us right after this. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming your way.
.97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. On the line right now, the host of Send It In, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser. Insider Calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find your podcast. As we come back into Sports Daily, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, PJ, how are you?
Doing good, guys. I'm doing good. Great to be with you. Great weekend of football. I can't believe it's almost over. We got 2 weeks left of college. We got week 12 in the NFL. It's crazy how fast it's going by.
Yeah, it's a good day. You know, we still got almost 3 months of NFL football, at least, and maybe with the college playoff now. PJ, let's start with Thursday night football. There's two things in this that I think I love tonight. Maybe that's too strong. I love the Steelers -3.5, but the one that I might love the most, and I'm trying to figure this one out and see where the trap is Jameis Winston's player prop right now. His over on his yards is set at 215. He has destroyed that prop in his three starts. And I'm looking to say, oh, maybe it's the Pittsburgh defense. Their average against the pass, at least yardage-wise this year, as a defense against the pass, that one's what am I missing with that prop?
Well, I think the weather. They're expecting some weather tonight in Cleveland. Okay. Some high winds, some precipitation, right? Anytime you're talking late November, December in Northeast Ohio, you got to definitely check the weather forecast. So that's why this total, guys, opened at 41. It was as low as 36.5. Now it's starting to go up just a tick to 37. So that's why I'm not really doing much with the quarterbacks tonight. If anything, I actually like Jameis under pass attempts at 34.5, just because I think both coaches, you know, are going to want to run the football because of these high wins and because of how Jameis tends to play with him loving to chuck the ball down the field. That's not going to be a good game plan in a game like this with the weather and with the Steelers pass rush and with their defense. So I like Jaylen Warren tonight over 12 and a half receiving yards. That would be the prop that I would look at, the Steelers running back. Russ in that game against the Ravens looked a little bit timid to me. You know, that was really the first game where he looked a little gun shy. He was kind of second guessing himself. I think the Ravens put certain things on film that the Browns will try to duplicate tonight. And again, because of the weather, I don't think Russ is going to take as many chances. I think he looks for his check down. So I like Jaylen Warren tonight. Then I'm going to be on the other side. I like the Browns plus 3.5. Tomlin's a pretty easy coach to bet on. When he's a home underdog, when he's an underdog in general, you bet him against the spread. When he's a road favorite, he's actually one of the worst coaches in the NFL, guys, against the spread as a road favorite. You got Pittsburgh coming off that emotional win against Baltimore. They're first place in the division. Now it's a short week. They go on the road against Cleveland, who coming off a blowout loss. This is a tricky game. So I actually like Cleveland plus the points, and then I like that Jaylen Warren prop.
Yeah, you mentioned Jaylen Warren. Is there anything with any of the other running backs with the way that the wind is going to be a factor in tonight's game? I mean, whether it's Nick Chubb or, you know, anybody else, you know, Najee Harris, is there a play with any of those guys?
So if it becomes available, I actually would look at Justin Fields tonight, right? Because he's the backup now with Russ. But in that Ravens game, you started to see some running packages with Fields. And I think the Steelers lean on that a little bit more this week because, one, it's a short week, right? And you're playing back-to-back AFC North games. You have another one on deck with Cincinnati. All these games are physical, fellas, right? We know this. So I think Tomlin is going to save some hits for his backs, for Russ. He brings Fields in, who's a very good runner to begin with. So I haven't seen anything pop up on BetMGM about Justin Fields, but if you can shop around and find some Justin Fields props, maybe look at his anytime touchdown price tonight. I think those are some good plays.
That's a really interesting one. All right, let's stay in the NFL, PJ, and then we'll go to college just since we already are here in the NFL. The Chiefs play a noon game, so we can go there now. This is an absolute get-right game for the Chiefs. The line is huge. It's 11 points on the road, which I don't know about that. But, man, a bad, bad run defense, a Chiefs team who can't block anybody, at least, again, you know, can't pass block anybody. They get Isaiah Pacheco back. They'll have he and Kareem Hunt. This feels like a game where the Chiefs are going to run all over them. What do you think about the Chiefs this weekend?
You know, guys, it's an interesting game. If there's one thing I know about the NFL when seeing a matchup like this, it wouldn't shock me if Carolina found a way to hang around. You know, just like the way the NFL is, they're coming off a bye. You got arguably the best organization in the NFL right now against the worst. You got the best quarterback against arguably the worst. And the Panthers will just find a way to keep this game close. If there's one thing we know about the Chiefs when we have these big numbers, it's that they win these games, but they don't cover spreads. Keep in mind, too, for Kansas City, right, their last three games and kind of the battles that they've been in. That Monday night game against Tampa, which I think took quite a bit out of them, trying to mount that comeback, win it in overtime. Then you have the game against Denver, another game they had to come back. They blocked the field goal at the end. And then obviously the game of the year so far against the Bills, right? A game that you get up for. We see this in college all the time where you have these marquee mega matchups. And then the next week, these teams go on the road and they kind of play in these sleepy spots and the energy level's just not there. It's a letdown game. So I think Kansas City wins, but I actually think they could be a little sleepy in this game, especially to start. So if you don't want to take the full game, maybe you just want to take Carolina like plus 6.5, plus 7 in the first half. I think that would be the way to go in this game.
It does look like, PJ, that, you know, at least the rumor is that Isaiah Pacheco should be returning next week, I think is what he's targeting for Kansas City. We've seen Kareem Hunt come in off the street in the last several weeks and perform fairly well. I would imagine that, especially knowing some of the offensive line issues that we've seen from Kansas City, you know, this season, especially at left tackle, that especially once they have Isaiah Pacheco back, between Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, this is more than likely going to continue to be a run-first team. Do you anticipate, whether it's this week or in future weeks, that we see Kansas City continue to lean on the running game? And so in that regard, is there a good angle for that?
Yeah, I definitely think so, especially because it plays into the hands of their defense, right? You run the ball, you keep the other team on the sideline, you keep your defense fresh, and we know that's the strength of the Kansas City team this season. So right now, Tommy, on BetMGM, it doesn't look like there are any props up for any of the Kansas City running backs. So I think they're still trying to figure out some numbers for that situation. But as you mentioned, Hunt's been great. I would assume his anytime touchdown price is probably going to be a minus. You're probably going to have to lay some juice for that. So maybe look at another way to attack it. But yeah, rushing attempts for Kareem Hunt in this game, I think, could be a good way to go, just because you figure Kansas City to be in the lead most of the game. This is just one of those games where I don't really think they care how much they win by. They just want to win and get out of there unscathed and get ready for the next one. So, maybe rushing attempts for Kareem Hunt. And as long as the anytime touchdown price isn't too crazy, I think that's a good bet too.
What else are we looking at in the NFL this weekend, PJ, that's got you really excited?
Yeah, probably, guys, my favorite bet on the board right now is going to be San Francisco plus the 2 against the Packers. I'm really excited for this game. George Kittle coming back for the Niners is a huge deal. He's going to help their run game tremendously. Brock Purdy did suffer a shoulder injury, so a little bit of a concern about that. But guys, San Francisco's schedule is brutal down the stretch. They're at Green Bay this week. They're at Buffalo next week. They still have a game at Detroit. They still have two more divisional games against the Rams and the Cardinals. So San Francisco wants to make the playoffs. They got to start winning some of these games where they're going to be underdogs. And, when you get teams like this, perennial playoff teams, teams that had Super Bowl aspirations coming into the beginning of the year, when you kind of get them in these must-win spots, I like backing them when they got desperation and when they're going into a game like this, knowing that they have to win. So if there's one thing I've known about San Francisco over the last 5-6 years, guys, the two teams that they've always played well are Dallas and Green Bay. It feels like they've had those two teams' numbers over the years. So I like San Francisco plus the 2. I also like the under on Monday night between the Ravens and the Chargers. Guys, the look ahead in this game was 47 on the total. It's all the way up to 51 now. I know the Chargers really haven't played that many great offenses this season, and everybody just saw Burrow and the Bengals kind of light them up in that second half and score 27. But the familiarity in this game with the Chargers offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, being with John Harbaugh and the Ravens, and he was Lamar's OC for the first 4 years of his career, all that familiarity there, certainly the Harbaugh brothers going at it. I just think it's too many points. The Ravens made a change in their secondary last week against Pittsburgh, taking out Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson, who've been terrible for them at safety. They brought in Ardarius Washington to play along with Kyle Hamilton, and it's the best that they've looked all year. So I think that change might help them. Chargers are a team that wants to run the football. Again, Greg Roman knowing that offense, knowing Lamar in that run game. I'm going with it under this week. I like under 51 Ravens-Chargers.
Sunday night.
I agree with that big time.
Yeah, Sunday night, the Eagles on the road. They're 2.5-point road favorites in L.A. to take on the Rams. The NFC West is, still kind of open. The Rams are not out of the question at all to try to make a run. But, of course, the Eagles have played better as of late. Is there a line you like on this or an angle that you like on this game?
You know, guys, it's interesting. A lot of people have been talking about the Eagles' defense here recently, right? How great it's been, how great those two rookie corners, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, have been. But this is really their first test coming out of that bye week. They did play at Cincinnati. That was a great game for them. Higgins didn't play in that one. But they've played Cleveland, the Giants, Jacksonville, Dallas, and then they played Washington on a short week. And Jaden Daniels still doesn't look 100% to me. So now they're going on the road. They're traveling across the country. They're playing the Rams with Stafford, Kyren Williams, Puka, and Cooper Kupp. I think this is where we kind of find out how good that Eagles defense is. So I think a lot of people are going to like the under because of how good the Eagles D has been. But I think they might be a little overvalued in the market. Really the first real offense that they've played since maybe week 4 outside of the Bengals. So I like the under on Monday night, but I actually like the over, guys, on Sunday night, over 49. I think we see some points in this game.
I like both of those. All right, let's switch over. We'll start with our two teams here, and then we can get into some other college football if we've got time, PJ. KU hosts Colorado, one of the marquee games of the week. KU, a 3-point dog at home. K-State hosts Cincinnati, an 8.5-point favorite at home. Two programs headed seemingly in opposite directions right now. One's, surging, one's reeling a little bit. Do you like either of these two bets?
Guys, I like Kansas. I like Kansas plus three. I actually think, as crazy as it is, these are the best two teams in the Big 12. We've been talking about the Jayhawks all year. You know, don't look at the record. They have had so many one-score games that haven't been able to go their way, but there's a reason why every week it feels like the line is so fishy in their games, right? 1.5 against Iowa State, 2.5 against BYU, now only 3 against Colorado. I think Kansas continues to roll. You know, they're just playing spoiler right now in the Big 12. Feels like they're playing all the top teams in the league week after week after week. So I like the Jayhawks here plus 3. Defense has been pretty solid for them all year. The offense is starting to pick it up a little bit. Colorado's rolling, and they're playing great, and the public's going to be all over them. I do like the Jayhawks, though, plus 3 in that game. So I like them to cover. K-State and Cincinnati, it's a tough one. You know, I really like K-State last week against Arizona State. That was pretty shocking what Arizona State did to them. It's tough. I really don't have any thoughts on that game. You know, it feels like Kansas State, whenever they kind of play a bad game, they tend to bounce back. So I would lean towards their side. I honestly think Cincinnati team total under might be the way to go. Bearcats offense has been up and down this year, hasn't been very good on the road. And again, you're getting K-State off a bad performance, good coaching staff with Klieman leading the way. So I don't think Cincinnati's going to score much in that game. I would like their team total under.
We've got a top five matchup on Saturday, PJ, with Indiana on the road taking on the number 2 ranked Buckeyes, 2-5. Indiana, it has been so much fun to watch this year, but of course, Ohio State is steady. Like, they're just that steady team, number 2 in the country. That's definitely the big marquee matchup this weekend. Anything in that game you like?
Yeah, I like Ohio State, guys. I'd lay the 13.5. I really don't think this game's going to be close. Indiana's a nice story. They're having a great year. They have a good head coach, but this is a different animal they're facing. And Ohio State, you know, they obviously got a ton to play for. You know, winner of this game, likely going to the Big Ten title game to face Oregon. So Ohio State, their defense, it's going to be really tough for Indiana to move the ball. There was an angle I was thinking of with Indiana in the first quarter at plus 3.5, just because Cignetti's been so great off of a bye week, and Ohio State has really struggled in the first quarter of this season. So if you wanted to get any part of Indiana, I think plus 3.5 in the first quarter could be a look. But I like Ohio State to roll, guys. I think they're going to take care of business, win this game by 3 touchdowns.
We've asked you about specifics, PJ. What are your favorite college bets?
Yeah, I like Ole Miss, guys, minus 10 this week against Florida. You know, Florida, a lot of people are kind of starting to like the Gators. They've been a pesky underdog here these last 4 or 5 weeks. I just think that game against LSU, we talked about that game last week, terrible matchup for LSU. They can't stop a running quarterback. That's what DJ Lagway and the Gators did. Ole Miss coming off a bye, one of the best defensive fronts in college football. I think Florida's going to have a really tough time moving the ball. So I like Ole Miss. I'd lay the 10. And then give me Oklahoma, guys, plus 13.5 against Bama. I'd take some money line as well. I think Bama's on upset alert this week in Norman. That's a tough place to play at night. They're coming off a bye week. Their quarterback, Jackson Arnold's playing a little bit better. And everybody just assumes that Bama's going to win out and they're going to make the college football playoff. And if there's one thing that this season has shown us, when we think we know something, another happens, right? And Bama has had... They've had the ability to like play teams close this year. They played down to the level of their competition. Maybe they're looking ahead a little bit to the Iron Bowl next week. So I like Oklahoma a lot. It's probably my favorite bet, plus the points. I'd take some money line as well. I think Bama's in for a tough one this week.
All right, PJ Glasser, we appreciate it. Good luck with the bets tonight. Man, I'm bummed about the weather. Now put all these teams in a dome. Can we can we look out for the fantasy football players and the bettors out there and just put everybody in a dome, please?
Especially when Jameis is playing quarterback, right? Like, no. That's the guy you want to see.
Yeah, let it rip.
Let it rip. Exactly. I agree with you.
Hey, he might do it anyway. It is Jameis.
That's true. That's true.
The interceptions for Pittsburgh is the way to go. PJ, we appreciate it. Host of Send It In, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser, Insider Calls. Presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. PJ, thanks. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys. Good luck to you.
Tommy, when you see, like, are you get excited with bad weather like some football fans, like a bad weather game? Because I hate it.
If it's not a major game of consequence, then yeah, like I'm okay with it. You know, if it's like between the 1-9 team and the 2-8 team. Okay, like, yeah, that's fine. Let's have just like chaos and have the wind blow 50 miles an hour and have it be pouring buckets of rain and sleeting and, you know, all of that. Like, I'm on board with that. Or like a bowl game that doesn't really matter between 2-6-6 teams. Yeah, let's have all hell break loose and have it be, you know, in a cold weather climate and have it be tough in that regard. On a Thursday night primetime game when it's the only, the main game in town, the primetime game, yeah, I'm not as big of a fan.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, if I didn't have any skin in it, it makes it interesting. But there's just so much skin to have now, whether you play fantasy football, whether you bet, like, whatever it is. It's probably about 50-50, I would bet. If we took a poll, I'll bet you it'd be about 50-50. Anyway, I at least put retractable roofs on there just in case. It's the wind. It's the wind. That's what quarterbacks will tell you. It's not the snow or rain or anything. It's the wind that bothers them the most, and that's why that number. I'm glad PJ enlightened me. I had not looked at the weather forecast yet. All right, if you missed any of PJ there, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. That's always available for you in podcast form. Chad puts that there. We've got a big hour number two coming up. We will start things off with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. He will join the program. But we got to talk about K-State. You know, PJ mentioned there, typically, historically, K-State has been good after a bad performance. And they weren't good after a loss in Houston and a bye week against Arizona State. Can they get it turned around quickly? What sort of paths exist for them still? Any hope, you know, kind of that chip in a chair mentality for K-State football and K-State basketball? We've all collectively been very optimistic about their prospects this year. Do we need to temper that? We need to at least start the conversation. We'll talk to Fitz about both of those things. K-State fans, get ready. That's coming up in the next segment. Glad to be with you here. On the way out, let's get our HTO giveaway going here. Free iced tea, sweet or unsweet, including the new peach cobbler, or a free ice store hot coffee, including the new peppermint mocha, which is limited time and people are going nuts for it, so get it before it goes away. You can get a free one of each of those right now at any of the Wichita Metro locations, East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. All you got to do is text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. And when you're there, don't forget, pre-order those Thanksgiving gallons. You get a discount, and you can pick up your gallons just before the holiday and get them ready for the Thanksgiving feast. We'll come back. Tim Fitzgerald, join Sports Daily next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
All right. Welcome back in, hour number two of Sports Daily. Joining us on the IHOP hotline now is Tim Fitzgerald. The Indiana Jones and Great Circle limited time offer menu at IHOP, including the secret cookie butter French toast, which sounds pretty good. We appreciate IHOP for their support. 869-1240 is the IHOP hotline. That's where we find Tim Fitzgerald. We also find him on our video stream right now, which is available to you on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. It's all right there for you. Fitz, happy Thursday. Good morning. How you feeling?
Hey, do you know how I got here? I hopped on.
Hey, by the way, yeah. I like that. I like that segue of the Indiana Jones talk as we were talking about Tim Fitzgerald because I think of him as our own Indiana Jones.
Well, I'm more like an artifact. Yeah,
I'm old. Yeah. You and Harrison Ford went to the same grade school, right? Yes. Something like that. Something like that. Fitz, I don't know where to start because it's not been a good, you know, couple of weeks in Manhattan. No doubt. I guess let's start with football. It you know, we just had our betting insider on who, you know, I think lives in Maryland and follows these things from afar. And he was like, you know, K-State typically bounces back from a bad performance. Well, that's kind of in their MO. And he's right, except they didn't bounce back from a bad performance in Houston and a bye week. They looked way stagnant. A lot of questions right now. I hope everything's okay with Chris Kleiman and his family. That's been a lot of the chatter. It is disappointing. I think at the same time, we got to remember how many key players on this team are still underclassmen. I think, you know, it's not a time to just be so dejected. It felt like they had a chance. This is a really young team that's got to learn how to go through these things still.
That's a good point. And this team just isn't playing well.
Right.
And you couple that with them playing without energy or emotion, which they did, you get an awful product. And that's what it was last week. And credit Arizona State. You know, they took advantage of an early turnover, got into the end zone, and kind of set the tone for the game, which K-State just flat out didn't answer. Not until the second half, at least. And I think this was a game that revealed a lot about this team, about the coaches, and about the fans, and how fragile this season has kind of felt, because they keep finding ways to get them out of spots, and then 2 weeks in a row they haven't. So they have a huge decision to make. I mean, if playing for the Big 12 title was all they really cared about, and trying to get in the playoff, that was their whole measurement. Pack it in, man. Go 7-6. Go to the Liberty Bowl and get beat by an SEC team. You know, because you could be a 7-6 team. You're playing like that right now, but they still could go 10-3. And if they really want to wake up and start playing some football, they'll win this game. They'll go to Iowa State, get a little revenge, and then go to a bowl game. That's a lot to ask. But, you know, that's time that K-State fans ask the team, what do you want to be? What kind of season do you want to be remembered for? And I promise you, it's not this one. It's not the one you're on track with.
Seems like it's been a pretty, I know you used the word fragile, but fragile and tough season for Chris Kleiman, some of which has been in full view of everybody, him not feeling well on the sidelines a few weeks ago, to some more things that are probably a little bit more private. But right. in his press conference the other day, it sounded like that speculation of him retiring that potentially, you know, was out there. He kind of squashed that pretty quickly. What do you know about his psyche, his mentality, where things are at with Chris Kleiman right now?
I think he's in a pretty good space. He ended Monday, he sounded great. I mean, he sounded kind of like Chris Kleiman again. He said at the end that they had received some good news between the end of the game Saturday and him coming to the press conference on Monday. And they needed that. So I think he would admit it became a distraction for him, maybe greater than he imagined. He was trying to compartmentalize everything and get it in the right box, and everything spilled out. I think the team picked up on that. I just think the team wasn't as focused as it needed to be, and I think that's part of why Chris Kleiman was so upset after the game, is he knew a lot of this was self-inflicted. A lot of this was how he managed things and managed his staff. And I think he's back to work and ready to get this thing righted if the team wants to cooperate and play with some pride.
I'm looking at K-State right now, and as we look at things that must get better, I'm pretty certain, without stacking it, the Cats are like 10th in the league right now offensively as far as points scored. They've been a good defense. I don't think anybody in the world thought that this would be an offensively challenged team when we went into this season, but they've been an offensively challenged team. And I think mostly it's when Avery lost the ability to run like he can. So what can be corrected, do you think? Because there's a lot. You mentioned the end of this season and how it could go, and that's all important to the psyche. But what's even more important to me, if they're not going to play for a championship this year, is that they ought to be playing for a championship next year. Next year really is the year, right? As all of these young, great, talented players become upperclassmen, that line we didn't know about, they get another year under their belts. So what can they do? What can we see offensively from this group between now and the end of the year that gives us confidence that it's going to be a top offense like it should be probably next year?
Well, they have to find an offensive rhythm that helps them. We saw them go to more of a sped-up offense in the second half, more like the fourth quarter. They should have started earlier, and they got a rhythm, and the play calls were different, and they kind of started feeling good about themselves. If that's what it takes, I know why they go slow. They want to protect the defense and keep them rested, but You're not doing that if you're turning the ball over on three downs. And it's just, it's been really frustrating year offensively. And Connor Riley, the offense coordinator, has taken a lot of the heat. It'll be interesting to see how Chris Kleiman handles that. I don't expect him to do anything in season. That's not his style. But this is a really close friend and someone who has been valuable to him. But I'm going to say this. I'm not sure it's all Connor Riley's fault, but I do think a big part of the offensive problem is Connor Riley is such a vocal and beloved leader of his offensive line. I truly believe moving him to the press box has been a disaster, not because of the play calling. Maybe you can argue that, but I just think the disaster's been he's not hands-on with his offensive line like he has been. And in a year that he doesn't have the same talent that he had, it's even more necessary that he be hands-on and he's up in the press box. I think that's hurt the team.
I know the game on Saturday, obviously there were, you know, poor performances and just they looked flat and stagnant and all of that. There were also injury concerns as well, especially offensively with, you know, both Jaden Jackson not playing, Keegan Johnson not playing, Dylan Edwards getting injured in the second quarter and leaving the game. As we move forward into this Saturday, especially offensively and really specifically Dylan Edwards, what do we know about their injury statuses and how do things look as they're getting their game plan put together for that?
Well, we don't know because last time we talked to Coach Kleiman was Monday, and that's too early to know. That's a, kind of a side downer to having a Monday instead of a Tuesday press conference. But both Keegan Johnson and Dylan Edwards tweaked hamstrings. Yeah, you know, if it's serious, I don't expect him to be back this week or maybe even next week, but who knows. Jaden Jackson was out for a team suspension. I think he should be back, but let me say this. In light of the fact that those guys didn't play much, they played younger guys like Trey Spivey at receiver and, of course, Joe Jackson at running back, and both of them played really well. They both made really nice plays in the course of the game, and I think we're going to see them play some more this week because, I've always said this. If you're going to lose being old, lose being young. Let them learn. So if a senior receiver can't keep his head on straight and, you know, to stay eligible, take away his minutes, man. Let the young guy have it. If a senior doesn't want to do what he needs to do to be a team leader and stand up for this team, sit him down and let a young guy go out there and make mistakes and learn from him.
I want to ask you before we talk basketball, I want to ask you about Colorado, Fitz. Great story. I think we all love the story. I think we all love what Prime has done. It's been great for this league. But if you look at who they've played, they've had a very fortunate schedule. They've only played, I think, three games against top half teams in the league so far this year. One, they took Baylor to overtime at home. The other, they lost to Kansas State at home. And then it was Texas Tech, I believe, was the other one. Kansas isn't going to be a top half team, although they're probably playing like one. And then Oklahoma State, like is there any concern when you look at Colorado that a lot of this has to do with the schedule? Because I want to believe that they've got a chance if they get in to make some noise in a postseason. There is a small part of me, though, that is afraid of the fact that they've had an advantageous schedule in the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, it's been amazing how some teams have really had much easier schedules than other teams. I mean, you look at Kansas State's schedule, they're going to end up playing all of the other contenders. They had Kansas. They had West Virginia, which has been up there. Now they have Cincinnati, Arizona State. It's amazing. They played them all. So this has just been an awkward way this has shaken out. But I'll say this. If the committee's suppressing Colorado because of who they beat, then explain Indiana.
Explain Boise.
Yeah. Indiana's just played an awful schedule. I think I read this morning that they've beaten seven of the eight worst teams in the Big Ten.
It's insane. The Big Ten. By the way, it's not just Indiana either. I know they get all the crap for that. Go look at who Ohio State and Penn State have beaten. They haven't played anybody. I'm glad we went down this road because the SEC and the Big 12 right now are being punished for having competitive leagues top to bottom.
Correct.
And the Big Ten's being rewarded. And I'm not saying Ohio State and Penn State and Indiana aren't good. They probably are. But, man, the Big Ten is full of crap teams. and these top, and it's been this way forever in the Big Ten. You don't see crap teams in the SEC that get beat up on, maybe Vanderbilt, right? You don't see that in the Big 12 hardly ever. It's been Oklahoma State this year. They're being punished now, and we'll see how it all shakes out. But it's almost like at some point you got to punish the Big Ten for not playing anybody. And maybe when the dust settles 3 weeks from now, we will see that punishment because they will begin to play each other. But right now, I sure hope we don't get them weighted heavily because they're not beating anybody. Oregon notwithstanding, Oregon has played a fine schedule and they beat Boise and all those things. But those other three, they're not playing anybody.
Nope. They're not. They're not. And I know this is a function of the scheduling. You know, sometimes it's going to be random and it's going to work out, but that has to be calculated in. It always has been. And now it's like, oh, but if it's Big Ten or SEC, we're just going to ignore the scheduling. We're going to ignore it because the conference is better. It's that assumption that makes this such a mess. You cannot assume that both of these conferences are elite. I think the SEC is. I do. I think their fifth best team is probably better than the third best team in any other conference. But
Fitz,
still.
Right now, the best SEC team is ranked seventh. I don't think it. I think the SEC is being weighted the wrong way than what we're used to seeing. They don't have anybody inside the top seven. Are you really going to tell me there's not an SEC team that's one of the top seven teams in the country? Come on now.
I agree. And then you get, you know, people like me will be screaming that a three-loss SEC team's up there. But they have to figure out how to handle these weighted schedules. It's not just, look, how you scheduled in your non-conference used to be a huge argument. And now that the SEC plays three rummies in the non-conference plus another game, it's like, it's not that important. And it is. Who you played, who you've beaten, who you've lost to, how you've performed in those games is really important to a resume. And that's just kind of being shoved aside in some places. In other places, it's not. And it's kind of sickening.
Let's talk basketball, Fitz. I've seen words used to describe the K-State game the other night against Mississippi Valley State, like lackluster, uninspiring, different words like that. Mississippi Valley State's the worst team in college basketball. They're ranked at the very bottom, and you can look at the final score. Yeah, Kansas State won by 18 points, but they were favored by 40. They lost. Mississippi Valley State lost to Missouri by 72 points like a week ago. There were some tense moments in the game. I think that, you know, there are definitely some major talking points from the game the other night, especially followed up, you know, with the loss to LSU last week. But I think the biggest place to start, what's going on with Coleman Hawkins? 2 points for him. Hasn't gotten off to a good start. He was the prized player coming into this roster this season, both from an NIL perspective and just what he can do on the court. Hasn't really come through so far this year, and it's getting to the point, at least for me, where it's becoming more and more concerning each game.
I totally agree. It's look, people want to say, you got 13 rebounds, you tried. We could have gotten 13 rebounds against that team. I mean, if you really wanted to go out there and hustle and get after the ball, the team's absolutely awful, and they were tied early in the second half with them. This is all about effort. This is all about guys not taking care of business on and off the court. This is all about a locker room that suddenly turned into me first. And I'm going to this trip to the islands is really important for them to get away from everything, get away from their current setting, and go play some basketball. But the worst thing Jerome Tang can do, and I know he likes to help kids get through, you know, tough times. It's always his inclination is to keep loving them. But if a kid isn't going to go with that plan and is going to disrupt your program, you better move them out, whether they're getting paid $5 or $2 million. I don't think Coleman's disruptive. I think Coleman's just, he thinks he's too good to play hard. And that's just disgusting. He's just not putting in the effort, and it's not translating to stats.
Do you remember when he was signed? Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, joining us. Do you remember when he signed? Because he signed at $2 million.
Right.
Coming off of a year last year where he averaged 12 points and 6 rebounds a game. There was a question asked, maybe by others, but by me, was it a use it or lose it situation to bring him in at $2 million. Kind of feels like it was a use it or lose it situation. Like, I think sometimes we're pretending like Coleman Hawkins was something at Illinois that he's not being at K-State, but he's kind of being at K-State what he was at Illinois, right? He's
nowhere near 12-6.
Well, but he's rebound. I mean, his assists are higher, his rebounds are higher, whatever. They haven't played anybody yet. We'll see. I know he should be better offensively. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, what are we expecting from him anyway? 12-6?
Well, I think we expect it higher because he is a legitimate NBA prospect. There's no way he's going to get there in the current way he's playing. That's what he's got to worry about is how is he going to be perceived here by the NBA scouts if you're just out there not even putting in effort. Yeah, here's the thing. When he's at Illinois, Daphne's got strong opinions about this.
Yes, she does. She's
Daphne. When he's at Illinois, he played a lot of post because they needed someone to guard the post. He's good at that. Yep. So he didn't play on the outside as much. He wasn't asked to do much offensively. And maybe they need to move him back into the post where he can't be lazy. Yeah, you can't just stand around guarding the post. Maybe that's what they need to look at. But what the young man needs to do is take more pride in his craft. Honestly, I see guys that aren't taking pride in their craft. They got their money. Yeah, they're good. This is a real, really strong coaching test for the staff and Coach Tang. I don't think they've had this kind of bad chemistry. They had a lack of talent last year, but I don't think they had horrible chemistry. Right now, they got horrendous chemistry. So hopefully a trip to St. Thomas, you know, which they clearly deserve, will go help heal them. If they don't win these three games, there's some good mid-majors in this, but they're the only power conference team. If they don't win this, it's just a travesty.
You mentioned, Tim, that Coach Tang's inclination is to love players through the tough times and help them through struggles and things like that. Doug McDaniel didn't play in the game on Tuesday night at all after he started against LSU. Coach Tang called it a coach's decision. Is that what that was?
Yeah, you know, from what I'm hearing, Doug thinks sometimes he doesn't really need to practice, doesn't really need to play hard, doesn't really need to do the things you need to do. You know, there's a reason why some of these kids are in the portal. You know, we can talk about the kids that left Kansas State. There was something that bothered the coaching staff about the kids, no matter what their stats were. And now we're seeing it in the opposite way. They brought in some guys with the hope of reforming them, and the Reformation Project has been a failure so far. So it's something they better get straightened out real quick because they don't have a very tough non-conference schedule. You start losing games, you're just not even going to sniff the tournament unless you just go on this miraculous Big 12 run, which they're nowhere close to even being able to do.
I think to look at with the team, just, you know, X's and O's wise, they didn't shoot the three well. It does feel like this is a team that's going to have to shoot the three well, which is always a scary proposition. They're a different, I mean, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. They live and die by the three, right? And I know a lot of college basketball teams do that. That's probably where you get help from a guy like Coleman Hawkins, right? Like, where can they generate? Does this team's DNA seem like a team that can generate the offense it will need if it is an off night from behind the arc?
Apparently not. They did a little bit in the second half against a dreadful team. My question is, why are you settling for three-pointers against Mississippi Valley State?
Yeah.
Get in the lane and score. That's what won the game. They're two big men. Shot the ball really well. The rest of the team shot 25% from the field because they're taking crappy shots. Whether they're open or long distance or I don't care. Driving the ball to the rim and scoring closer was available. And they just chose not to, and that's a sign of a really bad team.
Fitz, it's going to get better. Things will get better, right? Football, basketball. It's been a rough week. I get it. It's been a rough week.
I want K-Sayers to know, you can go watch the women's basketball team. You'll see effort and probably victories. This is a high-quality team. And also, I'm going to really enjoy the halftime show from the band because the band never puts in a disappointing effort.
Never misses. Again, we mentioned this last week. K-State, brings in its best recruiting class ever for women's basketball. KU just brought in 5-star players for women's basketball on back-to-back days.
Yep.
I love it. Get ready. It's going to be, it adds to the mix for all of us, and we're here for all of it. All right, Tim Fitzgerald, you can go find all the great work at GoPowerCat.com. You can follow Tim and Daphne at social media at Life of Fitz. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, see you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. If you missed any of that, if you joined us late, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. We'll catch our breath here on Sports Daily. We'll digest a lot of what Tim Fitzgerald, a lot of what PJ Glasser had to say in our last couple of segments, and we'll move along. It is holiday season, and holidays at Crestview Country Club are wild and crazy. Thanksgiving's the next big one. I'm taking the fam over to Thanksgiving brunch. I got to work Thanksgiving. So, you know, we'll be busy. We're going to pop over there for brunch, which is always nice. And then they've got some other festivities coming, and that's all available to you, even if you don't play golf. It's called a social membership. They've got all kinds of different things. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. Glad to have them supporting the show. We'll be right back. More Sports Daily coming right after this. All right. Welcome back. Busy last couple of segments, so we've opened the IHOP hotline back up to you at 869-1240. Leave us your video comments as well on the video streams, wherever it is that you take them in. Well, you do that on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, on 12 News Connected. Rick says on YouTube that Coleman Hawkins, very average at Illinois, certainly didn't feel like the highest paid player type numbers at Illinois, but we'll see.
He came on strong at the end of the year for Illinois. I know that's something that he's been trying to tout, you know, right now with his slow start at Kansas State was, hey, look, I started slow at Illinois last year. And, you know, then it got to the point towards the end of the year that he was scoring 20 points plus in a lot of those games down the stretch for Illinois. So it's just going to be a matter of whether or not he can duplicate that and do it again at Kansas State.
I don't know. It does give you hope, though. I mean, it's Tang and this staff. So if anybody can get it right, it's these guys. I mean, I think like if you had to think of challenges Jerome Tang is most equipped to handle, this would feel like something he'd be very good at. So hopefully so, because I really want this. Like, again, on paper, this is such an interesting mix and seemingly good fit. But yeah, you got to have the motivations there. So it was interesting to hear Fitz go down that road. Of course, up there in Manhattan, you're more in tune with those sorts of things. But we'll see. We need him to be good. Tommy, you and I haven't talked about the CFP. Paul and I got into it a little bit on Wednesday morning. Boise's in there. I think there are a lot of people confused as to why they would have the bye if that happens. But the reality, it's pretty simple. They're more highly ranked right now than any Big 12 team. Now, I know that might make people mad. I would tell you that the likelihood of them staying there is low, right? Is low. If a team comes through the Big 12 through the rest of the season in a conference championship game, has two losses or fewer, they're going to pass Boise State with one loss. Boise State's calling card is they've won all their games except one, and it was your calling card can't be a close loss to Oregon, right? That can't be what you hang your hat on to get a bye in the playoff. And I don't think the committee would do that. But I don't think there's a problem with this much, you know, with three games, four games left to play, putting them there now is fine. I don't have an issue with that. But I would tell you that either, if any of these, Arizona State, Colorado, or BYU end up being the conference champion with two or fewer losses, they're going to pass Boise. I mean, they will, because they'll have had quality games to get there. So I wouldn't be too worried about that if I was a Big 12 fan. Boise's really the only threat in that world. I mean, I suppose Army is. Nobody's going to complain if Army ends up making it through, right? They've got their big game against Notre Dame this weekend in what would become the greatest story of all time if Army makes it into the college football playoff. It would be... That's not even hyperbole for me. If Army made it into the debut CFP, it would very likely be the greatest college football story of all time.
I mean, is there a world where, and I don't think all three of these teams is likely, but at least maybe two out of the three, where you could see Boise State, Army, and Tulane in the 12-team playoff?
I don't think so. No.
Not even two of them? You think it'll be one out of those three?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess if Boise and Army both win the rest of their games, then it would happen, probably. Army will have, but look, if Army does its thing, it beats a team like Notre Dame. I mean, it's going to have a really interesting case to make, because it will have had that win that's better than, you know, anything. Tulane would fall out of the mix. I mean, either Tulane or Army is going to be there because they play each other, right? They would play each other in a conference championship game. So it would have to be Boise and one of them. So let's say you're looking at having to edge out a team like Tennessee. It's going to be interesting.
And Tennessee is the first team out in the latest bracket release, right?
Yeah. Notre Dame would fall out, though, so that would help. If Army beats Notre Dame, Notre Dame's got to fall below Army with two losses and Army and a head-to-head loss, so that would be one that opens up. I don't think Miami's going to run the table. I don't think Indiana. Here's a prediction for you, Tommy. Indiana won't make the college football playoff.
Really?
No. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Why do you say that? I mean, I know they play Ohio State this weekend, but I even think a loss at Ohio State probably, does that drop them all the way out of the top 12?
No, but I think it keeps them in the mix to play a conference championship game. And I love the Indiana story. I don't know the rules of the conference championship for the Big Ten. I believe it's just the top two teams, right? I think it's just the top two teams with this new bigger conference that they've got going now too. So if they lose and get in somehow in a conference championship game, because I believe they close with Purdue, who's terrible, then okay. Now you're going to put Indiana up against Oregon, Ohio State again, or Penn State. What do you think is going to happen there?
I mean, Indiana's really good, and they've been
now.
But now
you have an Indiana team with two losses that has literally beat nobody this year of consequence, right? What is their best performance this year? And I'm not asking that like pull it up on recall of what they've done this year, Tommy. They haven't done their schedule has been horrible, horrible.
I mean,
they haven't played anybody.
They've beat teams that you would think would end up being better than what they are, and they haven't been. Michigan's been disappointing. They beat them. Washington's been disappointing. They beat them. Nebraska has been disappointing. They blew them out.
Real quick, Michigan State is fourth from the bottom of this 16.
You're correct. I didn't mention Michigan State.
Oh, I thought you said Michigan State.
Michigan's
okay. Let's do this. Michigan's bottom half.
Right.
Nebraska's bottom half.
Right.
Michigan State's bottom half.
Washington's right in the middle of it. They beat Washington.
Five.
Yep.
Yeah. That's your signature winning. Yeah. It's a 6-5 team.
I get it, but like I'm not willing to, you know, write them off yet until this weekend is the biggest test for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, look, like they can, this is going to be the opportunity for Indiana to say we belong, we are legitimate, or we played nobody and they're going to get slipped.
I love it. And I hope they do. I hope they get there. Although I'm rooting for Will Howard too, so I don't know. What I'm saying is Indiana better hope they don't get in the Big Ten championship game. That would be my prediction. And I predict that they're not going to make it because I think Ohio State's going to beat them and beat them by two scores or more. And then I think if they play the conference championship game, the same thing's going to happen, whether it's Ohio State or Oregon or Penn State or whatever it is. And now you're looking at a two-loss team, and there are going to be lots of two-loss teams that literally their best win is against a what could be like a 500 team. You can't put that team in. You cannot put that team in. Because what if Indiana and Tennessee played at that point, and they both got two losses? Or some of the, what if Indiana played Georgia, and that's the resumes you're stacking up against each other? So I think there are some opportunities to get in there. Because I think they're coming out. I think, let me pull them back up. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating for all the right reasons. This will be fun. This will be wild and crazy. But what is the only thing that is driving me crazy at the moment, and it could correct itself, so it's not that big a deal yet, is how many Big Ten teams we see near the top. Because it's just, I don't think it's going to hold up again. So I think it's okay. But man, there's no way that league should have four of the top five teams based on how bad most of that league is. That's silly to me. None of these teams have a bunch of great wins. Oregon is fine because Oregon has the win over Boise. But the others, they just haven't played anybody.
I mean, Penn State has played some opponents. I mean, Penn State's had a better schedule than, like Indiana has.
Right. Yeah.
You know, for sure. And I think that's going to be part of it. I look at it more, and I understand the point about the Big Ten, and I don't disagree overall. I'm looking at it more from the perspective of the Big 12. I mean, the Big 12 is on the fast track to one team, and that team, whether it's BYU, Colorado, or otherwise, being the last team in to the CFP. I mean, the committee, at least at this point, I mean, they're valuing a Boise State team over BYU, over the Big 12. And that's a bad loss for BYU to lose to Kansas last week. It's a bad loss for them based on Kansas's record and Boise State losing to Oregon. That was their best loss. So, you know, I think that from the way when they released this on Tuesday night, my first thought was, man, regardless who the Big 12 team is, that ain't good. That ain't good for the Big 12. I mean, like, they're going to be the last team in, more than likely. They'll be one of them. It'll be the conference champion, and they'll be the last team in.
I think they'll get in, and they'll get the bye because I think they'll pass Boise. If Colorado handles its business with two losses, one loss in the league, they're going to pass Boise. BYU's the one I worry about doing it because they just haven't looked that impressive in their wins. Arizona State doesn't have the staying power. Man, if you look at Arizona State, though, like, Arizona State lost the game without their quarterback. Arizona State, like, you lost on the road to Tech and to Cincinnati. Those aren't bad teams. You got a win over K-State now. You would have a win over BYU if that's the scenario that plays out. You know, Kansas, if they finish strong, like, they've got some decent quality in there. And one of the losses, you know, they didn't have their quarterback. I think all of these resumes are better than Boise. Boise has a close loss to Oregon and a win over UNLV. Like, that's their resume. So I think they're passable. I think the Big 12 is going to be okay.
Are they going to lose again? I doubt it. I mean, they're going to beat Wyoming, I think.
No, I don't think they're going to lose again.
So they would need to be leapfrogged and Boise State doing nothing to hurt themselves other than just a weaker schedule. I mean, and they can't control that. So my first thought.
The Big 12 champion will have the benefit of playing that conference championship game.
You're giving the committee far more credibility and trust than what I give them. I mean, like, they've clearly shown right now that they do not value the Big 12. They did that with the rankings. They do not value.
They value a
weak scheduled Boise State team in the Mountain West over BYU, Colorado, Arizona State. Is that that's not going to change. I don't think that's going to change. They put Boise State in that spot for a bye for a reason, and they're going to be hard pressed, I think, to move them out.
Yeah, it's hard. You're tasked to find the best team. Would you say, right? What do you think would happen if Boise and BYU played tomorrow? Because I think Boise would beat them.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're probably right.
I don't know who would be favored. I don't know any of that. But I think Boise is a better team than BYU. The problem for the Big 12 has been BYU has been the best team, even though I don't know that anybody that watches the Big 12 thinks they are the best team.
I think, if we're comparing them solely to Boise State, I think BYU, I think it would be a close matchup between those two teams. I think Colorado would probably beat Boise State.
Colorado's the team that will jump them if they win all their
games. I think Arizona State is probably, they're comparable. They're probably slightly better.
I think they could be, I agree.
But I don't think the committee values the Big 12 enough. Even if Colorado or Arizona State win out, I don't think the committee values the Big 12 enough to have them leapfrog Boise State. I just think they value Boise State more, and they don't have a lot of respect for the Big 12.
I think they value them more right now. And This gets a little confusing for me. The committee obviously values the SEC, right? But we're looking at it with 3 weeks to go and seeing things that anger us. Like, yeah, the Big Ten hadn't played anybody. But what we're not considering is the amount of good games still on the table for the SEC and the Big 12 on through the conference championship. So what will I think ultimately make the committee put the Big 12 back on top of Boise, assuming there's not a chaos scenario, right, where all of these top teams lose another game, which is possible in the Big 12. But let's say it's Colorado, and Colorado wins their next two games, right? And then they get into a championship game against a one-loss BYU team or a two-loss Arizona State team, because Arizona State and BYU play each other. You will then have that game happen, and Boise play whoever it is they're going to play in the Mountain West. I think that is the ticket where, even if Boise doesn't lose, the Big 12 would then go back ahead of Boise because of that high, high quality game they get in a championship game. I think the same thing is going to happen for the SEC over some of these Big 10 teams that are up there now. They're going to get such a quality game in the SEC championship that whichever one it is, we're going to say the SEC is probably going to have the 2 seed. And the Big 12 is probably going to have the 4 seed. That would be my prediction, I guess.
Here's what I think is going to happen, crystal ball wise. I think BYU loses this weekend at Arizona State. Okay. I think that they continue on that slide. Then it's Arizona State and Colorado. And then at that point, I think it would have to be Colorado beating Arizona State in the Big 12 championship game for Colorado to leapfrog Boise State, assuming Boise State wins out. That's what I don't think BYU a week from now is going to be in the top 12. I think it will be in the Big 12. They'll be leapfrogged by Colorado and Arizona State both. I think that's going to end up happening. And then at that point, I don't think Arizona State is strong enough in the committee's eyes. Maybe they are, you know, on the field, but in the committee's eyes to leapfrog Boise State. I think the only team in the Big 12 that can leapfrog Boise State and get a bye would be Colorado. That's it.
Well, I think BYU can were to beat Arizona State and then beat Colorado. I don't think they're going to do that.
I don't think they're going to do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Here's the nightmare scenario for the Big 12. And this is real weird for us because obviously we follow and want Kansas to be really good.
Kansas beats Colorado.
They were kind of all screwed. and then Boise's going to get the bye. And honestly, it's not the wrong decision at that point either. It's the right decision. Boise has earned that, and that's the way the system's set up. And if that is the scenario that plays out, I honestly don't have a problem with it, right? I mean, you can pretty easily make a case with me for Boise's resume over an Arizona State Big 12 championship. I'm not going to be furious about that. I think it's what sucks about it is that Arizona State has played a better schedule than Boise State, obviously. A week-to-week schedule in the Big 12 is better than a week-to-week schedule in the Mountain West, no matter how you slice it. But you can make that case. We're making predictions here. Mine is that Indiana does not play in the playoff. I hope I'm wrong about that. I'd love to see them in there. And I'd love for this to be real and them to beat all these other teams I don't really like in the Big Ten anyway. All right, let's come back. More Sports Daily when we return. Don't go away. It's all Brockton Caster on a Thursday. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Tommy, Chiefs, Panthers. We'll get into it with our picks tomorrow. Just real quick, injury news. It sounds like Minshew and Pacheco are going to play. Just trying to recall some, because the Chiefs talked yesterday. Just trying to recall some of what they talked about. You know, they kind of say the same thing every week when they're previewing opponents. So you don't get much out of that from the Chiefs ever. Like, it's kind of funny. Andy Reid literally says the same thing about every team he talks about, like word for word verbatim. Panthers have won a couple of games in a row, certainly are playing better. That was a point. They have responded well. Everyone thinks to the loss. Mahomes talks about, you know, starting games, the way they're finishing games. And then Worthy, everyone's optimistic. I'm trying to, you know, they didn't get into the line a ton. There's not much to get into. I still think they're going to run the crap out of it this weekend. It's hard because you could also get the Panthers through the air. But I mean, why wouldn't you just start there? But then the flip side of it is, are you allowed in a game where you should beat a team badly to work on some things in pass blocking.
Yeah, I do think that it was notable from Andy Reid talking to the media this week about how they might have been a little bit too conservative, you know, to get the game plan going, you know, to start the game against Buffalo. And that maybe contributed to the slow start. It's this really fine balance between showing your cards and not showing your cards, prepping for the playoffs versus, you know, just not really giving your guys much to work with in the regular season. And so I don't know how much of that contributed to the loss ultimately for Kansas City on Sunday against Buffalo. But I do think that they're in a spot to bounce back a little bit against Carolina this week. As far as the line is concerned, I mean, everybody can be a broken record about it. Everybody and their sister knows the line is bad. The left tackle is bad. The outside line is bad offensively.
Left and right tackle.
Left and right tackle.
Quite frankly.
It's bad. It's not going to get any better. There's just, you know, there's not a silver bullet that can come in and improve it this season. There honestly just isn't. That was a miscalculation by Kansas City going into the season that they could run with Morris and Suamataia. It is what it is. It's just the fact of the matter. So I don't know if they're just kind of resigned to the fact that, look, like, we just have to deal with it and we have to try to work around it. We have to try to do things to, you know, to offset, you know, and mitigate the issues that we have at that position. You know, because otherwise it's like a broken record over and over and over again. And there's nothing that they can do to make it any better.
I think that, yeah, I don't know that I would bet on those players getting better, but they are young players. You know, if we're going to say, and I agree that Worthy is a young player who will get better, in fairness, Chiefs have a great offensive line coach. These are young players that could get better. It's, can they get better within a season and fast enough to make the impact that we need to? I guess that becomes the, you know, the question. I think we always need to be fair to young players getting better. And they are young players, not Juwan Taylor, but the two left tackle. Well, the one, Kingsley's not even really on the roster right now. Somebody else is a young player on the offensive line.
Ethan Driscoll, I think, is the young player on the offensive line. Okay.
I don't think it can get worse. So put him out there. It has been so bad that it is hard to imagine it being worse, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, could it be worse? I don't know. That's how bad it's been. We'll see. At least it's the Panthers. It's fine. Chiefs are still going to win the Super Bowl. At least that's what I'm picking for now. 869-1240. We're coming right back. More Sports Daily right after this.